Last time we had stopped at about the 18th verse of the second chapter of Isaiah. So tonight we'll begin Isaiah 2, verse 18. And the subject here that Isaiah is prophesying about is the time in which Israel is going to be carried away, rather in which Judah is going to be carried away into Babylonian captivity. And so he's describing the conditions of the country and of the people that are going to prevail and the results of those conditions at that time. So he makes the statement in verse 18, "And the idols he shall utterly abolish." Now, as we mentioned before, idolatry was one of the primary problems that these people had in regards to being able to serve God. When they went into the land of Canaan, they allowed not only those people who lived there before them, they allowed them to continue there. They allowed them to continue to occupy portions of the land, but they also took up their customs, their ways. They wanted to have a government like they had. They wanted to worship like they worshipped, and they even began to worship the same kind of gods they had, which were all idolatrous gods. And even when they worshipped the true God, they would use those idolatrous places, those groves of trees in which to worship Him. And so it seems that the primary lesson that was being taught these people and by making them go into captivity, passing this judgment upon them, was the lesson against idolatry. So he makes the simple statement, "And the idols he shall utterly abolish." These people had idols. They worshipped idols from the best I can gather, not only in a public sense, but they also had them in a private and personal sense. Little objects that they held as their idols. And then they had larger assemblies in which they would, as a group, worship idols. And so we learn from studying history that they certainly did learn the lesson about idolatry. Because no mention is found of them being guilty of idolatry in the New Testament. All in all of Jesus' ministry, I do not remember him having to teach against idolatry. Now, they had plenty of other sins. They were hypocrites. And they were blasphemous, and they were following traditions and so on. But idolatry as such doesn't seem to have been a primary problem during that time. And this was some 400 years after the captivity, but it was a lesson well taught them by God. Now we today are also living in a time in which there is rampant idolatry. Now we can participate in it. We can allow it to rub off on us. We can allow ourselves to pick it up as a tradition. But all the while, we should know that God has such very, very strong feelings about it that He caused Israel to go into captivity as a result of it. And when I say Israel, I'm talking about Judah now too, because that's the primary object of Isaiah's prophecy. Well, in saying that the idols shall he utterly abolish, and they should go into the holes of the rocks and into the caves of the earth for fear of the Lord and for the glory of His majesty when He ariseth to shake terribly the earth. Now this phrase, "shake terribly the earth," has to apply to that time in which He is going to pronounce this judgment and bring it about and cause them to be carried away into captivity. That's what "shake terribly the earth" would have to refer to. Now, it probably has a greater fulfillment also in God's ultimate destruction of the world at the end of time. For we read over in Revelation 6 and verse 16, I believe. Let me check this here. A very similar statement. Yeah, Revelation 6, verse 16, which he's talking about the opening of the sixth seal. Verse 15, and the kings of the earth, and the great men, and the rich men, and the chief captains, and the mighty men, and every bond man, and every free man hid themselves in the dens and the rocks of the mountains, and said to the mountains and rocks, fall on us, and hide us from the face of him that sitteth on the throne, and from the wrath of the Lamb, for the great day of his wrath is come, and who shall be able to stand? So this is very closely related again in Revelation about them having the rocks to fall on them and to use the rocks and the dens and the caves as a hiding place from this great wrath of God. Now it seems that they're not hiding necessarily here from God, but they're hiding from the wrath, from the judgment, from the plague that comes upon them as a result of their having disobedient to God. And the historians say, and the commentators say, that this area round about in Palestine and in the area up around Sidon, that there are many, many places where there are mountains with caves and rocks, and that there is a very easy ability for people to go into those places and hide. For example, in one of those caves, David went with some several hundred men, and Saul came into the place and didn't find them because they were hidden there. They claim that close to Sidon, that there was one area that had some 200 rooms that had been hewn out in the rocks with just about 2 foot square doors, and the room was several feet square inside, but there was 200 of those rooms there for the purpose of hiding in some way. Well, when this captivity came, whenever this great terrible shaking of the earth came for these Jewish people, then they would be going into the holes of the rocks and into the caves of the earth for fear of the Lord in order to escape this terrible thing that was about to happen to them. And I'm sure if somebody came to this area and started just rounding people up and hauling them off into captivity to some foreign country someplace, that we'd be trying to hide also. And that's what he's predicting will happen. In that day, a man shall cast his idols of silver and his idols of gold, which they made each other for himself to worship, to the moles and to the bats. Now these moles were the very lowest of animals that lived in these rocks and in these caves. And I'm told also that there were giant bats that lived in some of these caves. For example, the Great Pyramid of Egypt had some huge bats that lived in this Great Pyramid. And so they were common animals apparently. And so these idols upon this occasion would become so useless to these people. And quite possibly they would see as a result of this prophecy that these idols had got them into their jeopardy, and they would then try to free themselves of them, that they would cast these idols of gold and of silver to the moles and to the bats in these caves and, you know, just throw them away because they're of no good to us. And you know as well as that is anything you make or somebody else makes and you obtain it for the use of some kind of a sacred purpose, that when it really gets down to needing God, these things are of no benefit whatsoever. And if you have any true realization of God, you're going to want to cast them to the moles and to the bats, just as it was predicted these people would do. To go into the clefts of the rocks and into the tops of the ragged rocks for fear of the Lord and for the glory of His majesty when He ariseth to shake terribly the earth. So these people would be using the clefts of the rocks and the tops of the ragged rocks and go into them for the fear of the Lord and for the glory of His majesty when He arises to shake terribly the earth. And this seems just to be a description then of their futile attempt to run from, to flee, to escape this captivity. And it's quite possible that some persons were even able to escape this way. Could they stay in hiding over a period of years maybe? I do not know, but this is what was clearly stated would happen. So he begins to conclude here in verse 22. Cease ye from man, whose breath is in his nostrils, for wherein is he able to be accounted of? And the teaching there is to stop, to run away from, to cease and desist from following after man. Cease ye from man, whose breath is in his nostrils. All of this problem, this idolatry, really originated from man, because the idols were no real gods. these objects of stick and stone, they in no wise coerced or encouraged a man to worship them. So the encouragement to follow after idols has to come from man. And so really when you're following an idol, really what you're doing is following a doctrine that's been perpetuated and originated by a man someplace. And so you're a follower of man. And so he says here, "Cease ye from man whose breath is in his nostrils, for wherein is he to be accounted of?" So the real thing is not to get rid of the idols and stop just there, but the real thing is to stop following after man. And we find that the only true thing in this life to be feared, aside from the devil himself, is man who's working after the devil. We don't have to be afraid of wild beasts or of hurricanes or storms or lightning or water, although they may take our life on this earth, but that's not the thing that's going to cause us to lose our soul. Some man, though, or men, who we decide to follow, can certainly cause us to lose our soul. They can turn us away from God. And so that's what he tells them here. "Cease ye from man, whose breath is not just full, wherein is he able to be accounted of?" You're just not going to be able to cause any man to stand and take account on the day of judgment for your sins. He's not going to be accountable for you, nor for me. You're not going to be accountable for me, and I'm not going to be accountable for you. So we cannot afford to allow man to get into the position of dictating to us what we practice and what we believe to the point that he's accountable for our actions, and we then are innocent, even though we may be wrong, because that's not the way it is, nor is that the way it ever will be. Now, beginning in chapter 3,